when I'm writing characters, I know absolutely everything about them. Like, I know how many cavities she has, whether she reads her horoscope in the morning, whether she paints her toenails. She doesn't. She definitely doesn't paint her toenails.
This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes, which are incidental or additional to the main topic
in the margin of a book.
Gail Honeyman is from Scotland, but she was in the States recently on a book tour for the paperback release of her debut novel, Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine. She stopped by the KMUW studios to talk about the book, her title character, her writing process, the 2018 Women's Prize for Fiction, for which she was longlisted, and whatever else I could think of to keep her talking with that beautiful Scottish accent. And we did it all while avoiding spoilers. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. The title of your book is Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine, and the book is told from Eleanor's point of view, and so we hear her thoughts. And we're in her head when she thinks, if someone asks how you are meant to say fine. You are not meant to say that you cried yourself to sleep last night because you haven't spoken to another person for two consecutive days. Fine is what you say. And, you know, I read that with this book you wanted to explore loneliness. And I honestly was a little surprised that Eleanor knew the rule about replying with fine, because it seems to me that, like, the loneliest of the lonely seem to need that conversation.
That's a really interesting question. I don't think she knows she's lonely. I think that's part of the journey that she goes on over the course of the novel, is that she's someone, when we encounter her, she's learned how to survive, but she hasn't really learned how to live. And part of that is reaching out and having meaningful conversations and meaningful interactions with other characters. But that's something she learns over the course of the novel.
Okay, so the book, it came out in hardcover last year, and it's just coming out in paperback now. Are you worried about spoilers at all in conversations like this?
Yeah, it's a really difficult book to talk about without giving away the plot. So I've been trying my best not to give anything away for people who haven't read it yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I really try to honor that as well.
Yeah, I mean, but it's not easy particularly with this book. I know. You have my sympathy.
So we learn a lot about Eleanor through her own thinking, but also from others' reactions to some of the things she says aloud. She has no filter. How does a person in Eleanor's situation learn about social mores?
She learns by observation, I think. She's a very intelligent person, and she's a very well-educated person. But in some ways, when I was writing the character, I was almost imagining that she hatched out of an egg, age 29. You know, although she's smart and educated, so many things that we've all taken for granted since birth or learned about from a very early age, she hasn't learned or had the chance to experience, for reasons we won't go into to avoid any spoilers. So learning about social mores is just one part of the whole learning process that she has to go through as part of her character development in this novel, I think. And taking that more broadly, thinking about emotions and that kind of those kind of social skills that most people have already acquired by the time they're Eleanor's age. I had her at, although she's 29 when we meet her in the novel, and she turns 30 in the course of the novel, I had her at about 14 emotionally, I think, because of her life experience, that she's a bit behind emotionally. And that's something that she has to catch up on.
When we meet Eleanor, she has quite a bit of baggage. And she discovers almost by accident that it is through giving that she starts to receive. When she visits both Sammy, the older gentleman in the hospital, and then her coworker Raymond's mom, she alleviates a little bit of their loneliness while simultaneously relieving hers. And they both seem to happen about the same time. Was this a pivotal moment for her?
Yeah, I guess it's that realization that kindness is another theme that I wanted to explore in the novel, and the transformative power of very small acts of kindness. And they're wonderful to receive, to be on the receiving end of, which Eleanor is. But if you're the person performing the act of kindness, however small it is, it makes you feel good as well. It's a sort of a virtuous circle. So I think that's kind of what you're getting at there. And I think that's right. It's beneficial to all involved in that cycle of kindness. Yeah.
We learn this fairly early. We learn from Eleanor that she has scars from burns on her face. But I didn't get the feeling that most people would avert their gazes when they would look at her. Do you think she had a harsher self-image than the rest of the world would see? I mean, why would her mother say such vile things to her? I mean, Raymond wasn't easily pushed away.
Mm-hmm. I think part of what I tried to do in developing the character of Raymond was stress, apart from his kindness that we just talked about, he's a very non-judgmental person. And that's one of his very special qualities. And it's the quality that allows him to connect with Eleanor. He takes her as he finds her, and he finds her just fine as she is. But he also supports her when she decides that she wants to make some changes. And that's one definition of what a good friend is. Her self-image is because of her childhood and so on. I don't think she has a very accurate self-image. And that's another part of the learning process that she has to go through over the course of the novel, with the support of other characters that she meets, like Raymond, for example.
Eleanor has quite the vocabulary. And I was reading along with Eleanor, and on a Saturday, she had been up for hours cleaning, arranging the contents of the cupboard, and this is quote unquote, so that the labels were facing forward in zetabetical order. And I stopped immediately and looked it up. And the first three results were posts from other Eleanor Oliphant readers who had discovered the word through you.
Oh, really? That's so funny.
And so I want to know, how would you fare head-to-head against Eleanor in a vocabulary contest?
Yeah, she'd be quite a formidable opponent, wouldn't she? Before I even started to write the novel, I worked really hard to develop the voice and the characterization of Eleanor, because it's a character-driven novel first and foremost. And part of developing her voice was her very particular vocabulary. She's self-taught in many ways, in that because she's so isolated, she doesn't get the chance to pick up words and phrases and slang and kind of contemporary phrases that most people pick up at the water cooler at work or with their friends, because she doesn't really have any friends, unfortunately, when we first meet her. So her speech is so formal and unusual because she's in her own little bubble, and there's no external influence apart from the very highbrow reading matter that she engages with. So yeah, her vocabulary was a kind of key characteristic of helping to nail her particular voice.
I did love how she tried, like, adding an O onto, like, no problemo. she was, even with all of her, I wouldn't even call them flaws, but she was charming.
Oh, that's nice to hear. Thank you. It's like learning another language for her, just learning how to talk like the other people in her office talk,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Eleanor Oliphant is completely fine as your first novel. And I understand you wrote it while working another job?
That's right. Yeah, I was working full time in a university in an administrative role. And I'd always wanted to write a novel ever since I was a child. And I did write a lot when I was a child. I stopped when I went to university. And I didn't get back to it because I was always thinking, oh, you know, the perfect time will come when I've got no other demands on my time. And it was a cliched thing of my 40th birthday. And a big birthday like that does make you kind of reassess things you haven't done yet in your life that you want to do. And I thought I should just stop daydreaming about writing and start doing it, because there will never be the perfect time or set of circumstances where you've got nothing else to do but sit and write. So I got up really early in the morning and did a bit before I went to work, or in my lunch break I would take a notebook to a cafe near the office and kind of plan out chapters that way. So it took about just short of 3 years, about 2.5 years to finish it.
This was your first novel, but your book was longlisted for the 2018 Women's Prize for Fiction. Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Well, it's the whole experience from start to finish has just been like a dream, really, because I had no expectations for the book whatsoever. Really, when I started to write it, I just wanted to see if I could write a novel, just get start at the beginning and get to the end. Because when I started writing again as an adult, this 40th birthday that I mentioned, I started writing short fiction. And it's not easier to write short fiction, but it feels more achievable just because the time frame involved. You can start and finish one within a matter of days or weeks. Whereas a novel just felt very daunting, but it was always the novel form that I was drawn to. So basically, my intention was just to see, can I grapple with 80,000 words, 90,000 words, as opposed to 2,000 or 3,000 words in a short story? And I had no expectations of it beyond that at all. So the fact that then somebody wanted to publish it, and actually more than one publisher wanted to publish it, and then it to be longlisted for an award like that, it still feels like a dream. I don't know when it's going to sink in. It's going to take a while, I think. Yeah.
So did the winner surprise you?
Because I've been travelling, I don't actually know who won it.
Home Fire.
Oh, Camilla Shamsie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. Great.
So I guess you're surprised.
No, not at all. Not
I'm
at
cheesing.
All. I've been in a little news-free bubble because I've been traveling, so yeah. I missed that. Oh, great. Well, that's great. Congratulations to her. That's fantastic.
I wanted to ask, I mean, you are from Scotland. Mm-hmm. You've always lived there. And somebody, I can't remember the character now, that they commented that Eleanor didn't have an accent because she was from down south, or was it up north? Now I don't know.
No, down south. Okay. Yeah.
But she would have had some accent, yeah. Like compared to us.
Yeah.
Was it more like a British or?
Hmm.
I'm just curious about how she sounds.
I don't really hear her voice that way. It's an odd thing because I don't see her face and I don't hear her speaking voice. So when I'm writing characters, I know absolutely everything about them. Like I know how many cavities she has, whether she reads her horoscope in the morning, whether she paints her toenails. She doesn't. She definitely doesn't paint her toenails. So I know everything about them, but I don't see a face, yeah. And I don't hear a speaking voice, weirdly.
That was Gail Honeyman, author of Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine, which was published by Penguin. You can discover new episodes of Marginalia at kmuw.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And we love ratings and reviews. Marginalia is produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. And I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.